A year ago, the Irish gay rights movement was founded in Dublin to fight for the rights of Irish homosexuals. Ireland is the only sovereign EEC country to still retain criminal sanctions in law against homosexuality, with penalties from 10 years to life imprisonment. In studio tonight, we have the national chairman of the Irish gay rights movement, David Norris. David, are homosexuals sick people?
Do you remember the last time you were wrong? The last time you changed your mind? Do you ever look back and think about what you were taught growing up, what you believed growing up, and the person that you once were? I was born in 1992. I grew up in a very strict Christian household, full of love and happiness, but rigid when it came to right and wrong, good and bad. Lying was wrong, fighting was wrong, cursing was wrong, drinking was wrong, smoking was wrong, sex before marriage was wrong, homosexuality was wrong. Stephen and Kay, a married couple from the west of Ireland, grew up under similar circumstances. Originally from Roscommon, Stephen's county was the only county to vote no against legalising gay marriage in the referendum in 2015.
Well, I suppose I was very disappointed, but I didn't expect. It is a very traditional county, you know what I mean? And coming from that, I would have been of that traditional approach myself when I left it in, do you know what I mean? I think that they wanted, there was a stronger probably undercurrent of Catholic and I suppose right-wing views down there that would have prevailed on the day, that would have made it difficult. And I think that generation gap was huge, because there would have been that ignorance and the prejudice that there in that generation, and would have been with me until Kyle came, do you know what I mean, into our lives. I would have been prejudiced against, I don't mean against it, but I would have definitely have had a different view if Cathal hadn't been gay.
Yeah, I probably would as well.
I would more than likely have been voting no, I would think myself.
And I would imagine I would as well.
Carol is originally from Ballyfermot in Dublin. She has three daughters, Linda, Emma and Dee. Her youngest Dee is a lesbian. I spoke to Carol about her experiences growing up regarding homosexuality. Was it mentioned? Was it visible? Were they noticed?
No, I don't remember anybody talking about being gay. When you ask that question, I think about people, the word queer and faggot. There was never the word lesbian when I was growing up, but queer and faggot. And it's only when you're talking about it now, and I don't even know what context, but they were, you know, they were kind of words. That's all I can remember. It wasn't noticed. We were definitely not taught that in school. When you didn't kind of speak about it, even if, as I mentioned, the two words queer and faggot, probably didn't even know what they meant.
Barbara is also from Dublin, and her son Kevin is a bisexual.
I remember comments used to be made about particular teachers, that people would say, oh, and it wasn't gay, actually. In fact, the first time I ever remember anybody mentioning it was my older sister saying to my mother that she didn't like the science teacher and that he was a fairy. And I said, oh, I don't think he's that light on his feet. I think he thumps around the place. I didn't have a clue. And I would have been at least in first year, so I was at least 12 at that stage. And the whole idea of it, just, I didn't even know what she was talking about. And then I remember they all laughed and I felt really good. So it wasn't like it was all people talk. It just wasn't discussed. It just was hidden under the carpet.
Kay and Stephen have a son, Cahill, who's also gay.
Well, I remember as a young fella, there was a fella at home who was, you know, he wasn't in any relationship, but he was, the rumour was, if you like, that he was gay, or it wasn't even gay as such, it was that he was homosexual, or that he was different. But
yeah.
He went to mass and he lived on his own, and he lived a solitary life, if you like. He worked in the local village. And there was some other one that I just can't remember or identify, but I remember it being Do you know what I mean? It wasn't spoken about or it wasn't mentioned.
Like, yeah,
they'd never mentioned it at home to me, or it was never...
There might be a suggestion that somebody in the kind of, you'd stay away from them, but yeah. There was never, you didn't know why, or you didn't know... Because I remember it was only in later years then, you know, that you realised they were actually gay, but that there would have been a thing there, never said but understood.
Throughout Cathal's childhood, he attended Catholic schools and spoke on the influence which religion had on his sexual education.
I do remember being spoken about, I think in sixth class, about the idea that marriage is between a man and a woman, from the church's point of view. But that was kind of brushed over, and it wasn't really... It was just kind of, given that marriage is one of the sacraments, it was just kind of like assumed that like it was always between a man and a woman. And of course, like in sixth class, we were 12, we probably never encountered anybody from the LGBTQ+ community at that point that we knew about anyway. So our whole like engagement with marriage would have been always, especially like from my point of view, would have been on my parents' level, on my auntie and uncle, and that was always between a man and a woman. So it was just one of those soft assumptions you make, is that marriage is always between a man and a woman, especially at that age.
Recently, I've looked back at my time in school and been amazed at my own ignorance when it came to the LGBT community. I finished my leaving in 2010, and during that time can never remember homosexuality being discussed in the classroom setting. Thinking of the change which has taken place in my own knowledge and attitudes since 2010, sometimes I wonder at how the generations before mine have managed to catch up.
Never in the curriculum at that time. It obviously is now, but it wasn't. I was teaching until 2003. Because I was in a girls' primary school, you see, and it wasn't a bit prevalent, you see. And sometimes I say to myself, how all of a sudden every second one seems to be gay now? Is it a new phenomenon, or was it always there and that we just knew nothing about it? Was it just ignorance, like on our part? But it wasn't even it certainly was never mentioned at school or with any of the sex the booklets that we had. There was never any mention there would be maybe two guys could be in love or two girls. It was just always assumed it was a man and a woman. And it's only in the last 6 or 7 or 8 years that it has all come to such prominence. Because even when it was decriminalised, I wasn't even aware of that at the time.
In fact, the first year I was teaching, I was made tutor of a particular class. And it became very clear to me in my first or second year that one of the particular girls in the class was lesbian. And she did actually come at a later stage and talk to me about it. So, from a very early stage, I started to I was aware of people who were trying to cope with this as though this was something terrible, something they had to actually hide from other people, and it bothered me. And when I went in to do guidance counselling, that would have been in 1993, so it was a good 10 years later, and definitely at that point there would have been a lot more about it. Now, whether it was because I was going into the counselling area or whether it was because in those 10 years a lot had changed, I don't know.
I still remember exactly where I was the first time I found out one of my friends was gay. I was 17 and just bumped into a mutual friend of ours. She joked about how weird it was that the person who Dee had been spending all her time with wasn't a boy, and I just laughed along. It wasn't until a minute later that the penny dropped and I realised what she was referring to. Later, I asked another friend of ours, was Dee gay? I still remember the look on her face when she laughed and told me I'd have to ask Dee. She knew. Everyone had known. But Dee had been too afraid to tell me.
And then I remember when I was in college, I fancied this guy. And he ended up telling me that he was gay. And I think he was the first gay person I knew, and I was interested in it, in why and what it meant and all the rest. And he was. I don't know him now. I never will have met him since. Really, we were friends for a very, very short period of time, and but he couldn't tell anybody. And I remember thinking how awful that was, that you could have those feelings for somebody, and he had feelings for somebody, and not be able to actually do anything about it. And to the extent that he pretended to be interested in me, which he evidently wasn't.
Kevin is Barbara's son and now advocates and talks openly about his sexuality and being a bisexual man, but this wasn't always the case.
So yeah, I never intended to come out, because as a bisexual person, even now my job is I write about sports for a living, but people just kind of naturally assume that because I like sports that I'm straight. I kind of figured I had to come out to my family, so I told my sisters. I got two younger sisters, I told them first, then I told my mum, then I told my dad, and then I told my older brother. And it was weird. I told my mum, she was driving me to a friend's house, and I kind of just blurted it out. And she kind of just turned to the side, what? And she'll hate me saying this. She almost drove into a tree, and she'll deny that happened, but it did almost happen. Because it was, I kind of just caught her off guard more than anything. My parents had always said, when I was growing up, you know, don't care, straight or gay, whatever, it's who you are. I remember exactly who the first guy I ever saw that made me feel that way, but I was very young, I didn't really understand any of that. It was former Arsenal goalkeeper Alex Manninger. So even then, you know, hiding in sport. He's an Austrian goalkeeper, was backup to David Seaman for Arsenal in the 97-98 double winning season. And he had really rosy cheeks. Just a very cute guy. And I remember just having this weird thing where I just liked looking at him and I didn't really understand why. Like, I liked the Spice Girls when I was younger and I liked looking at Emma Bunton. And I understood why. I didn't feel like any sort of like sexual urges. I just understood that, oh, I just must find her pretty. Whereas with looking at Alex Manninger, I had no idea what was going on, because I didn't even know that gay was a thing. I honestly didn't know that there was any option other than straight until I was like 10 or 11, I'd say. And it kind of slowly started to make sense.
The road which led to law reform and the legalisation of gay marriage in Ireland included the milestones of the decriminalisation of homosexuality in 1993 and the enactment of the Civil Partnership Act in 2010. Apart from these legal changes regarding homosexuality in Ireland, it was a long road which led to the changes in attitudes in wider Irish society. Change is something which is a continuous process, and the change which has been experienced in Ireland differs greatly from person to person.
Even now, I've been out for a few years now, and I might see a guy walk by and I'll kind of give a second look at him, and then my mind will go, don't do that, that's gay. And I'll have to be like, yeah, but it's okay, we're out, we don't have to hide anymore. But like, I spent so many years just repressing that part of me for like 8 or 9 years.
I don't go out. I mean, a lot of my friends that know that Dee is gay, but we never. I don't talk of Dee being gay, because to me, there's no need to talk about it. She is what she is. So in that way, my friends wouldn't. My close friends, probably people I see a lot, would probably know, because you talk about all your children and their relationships, and you talk about this, that, and the other. In that way, they wouldn't know. But my wider circle of friends. A lot of them would know, but they, if we were out and we were talking, they wouldn't necessarily remember that Dee was gay, and they'd be just talking about, we'd be talking about the referendum.
Yeah, I think it's really difficult for me to say, because
I wasn't in a relationship at the time. I only had like a few brief relationships before. So I never existed in Ireland that was specifically intolerant. So like I never existed in the 70s or the 80s or the early 90s when I'm sure there probably was a very different outward attitude towards gay people. But at any time since, I've been out, and especially in my late teenagers, when you'd be like, as someone like me who's engaged with politics, would be engaged with these things, I've never felt that I lived in a homophobic society. And what I mean by that is like, I never felt like people ever felt particularly comfortable, to me at least, expressing extreme homophobic views. So in the last year, has it changed? I don't think so, because I think society had changed a lot, especially in like the early 2000s and late 2000s. So what happened last May was more of the law catching up with societal thought. I have still experienced like homophobic abuse since by like a small number of people. There still is that out there. I don't think it is, it's definitely not as prevalent as it would have been a number of years ago. But I don't think that there's necessarily been a conscious change since last May. I think that change happened in the decade before the referendum.
One of the people who has had the largest influence over the evolution in my beliefs is my friend Dee. In 2015, I was lucky to be able to have the opportunity to canvass with her for the Yes Equality campaign in the run-up to the referendum. Handing out badges and leaflets for Yes to Equality on a rainy night at the start of May, I considered myself blessed to be able to contribute even a small part in the making of history. My own experience of the Yes campaign and the marriage referendum inspired me to then document others' experience of that time also. And who could I have started off with if not Dee?
Yes, the first door I knocked on was the best door I knocked on in the entire experience, because so I knocked on this door and this man, maybe like late 60s, early 70s, opened the door and I was like, oh God, here we go. And I told them what we were there for. I was saying we're campaigning for a yes vote for the referendum coming up in May, and he got so excited and shouted back into the house, and five other elderly people came out, like, and they're all saying we're all voting yes and telling me like they had like younger relatives, you know, and stuff. But and oh, and one of them said that he had been fighting for, he was saying that he'd been fighting for gay rights, LGBT rights since like the 70s, stuff about HIV AIDS and stuff. Yeah, so that was a really good experience for my first door. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was really positive. I think that was the main thing about it. I think you could just see that it was really important to all those people who are involved with it. And it was really important to all the ordinary people like on the streets banging on doors, that it was really important to them. And they like imbued that sense of positivity in everything they did. And it was really personal, and I think that's why it was so successful. In that sense, it was about individuals. It wasn't about this kind of idea of society being upturned. It was very much about like what this means for individual couples throughout the state. And I think in that sense, they like captured the mood really well and people's feelings.
I came out in 2012, and I remember having a discussion with someone about same-sex marriage, and they said like, oh, do you think it's going to happen? And I said, honestly, 3 years before the referendum, I honestly said, I don't know if I ever see it legalised in Ireland in my lifetime. And for that to have changed in 3 years is huge. I'm glad that it has. And that is a lot of progress.
From about an hour's time, we will no longer hear the expression gay marriage. about marriage. By everybody and anybody, no matter who, no matter what. Irish men, Irish women, equals all.
In her foreword for the book, Ireland Says Yes, Mary McAleese quotes the amendment to the Irish Constitution to allow gay marriage, which writes, "Marriage may be conducted in accordance with law by two persons without distinction as to their sex." But what are the next challenges which face Ireland in the future?
I guess what achievable in 5 years would be people just being more comfortable being in their relationships in public. I don't mean like crazy PDA, but I just mean like before you hold hands, not having to go through the checklist like, okay, what time is it? Where am I? Have a look around, who's around me? Is this okay? Is that lad going that way or this way? You know, like, so that would be nice.
I think it's really easy to think that what happened last May with the referendum is the summit of like all the problems that we have. And I think what I said earlier about like experiencing a small bit of homophobic abuse, the sense that there is like a low level toleration of slight homophobia. So while like last May was really good, it's important that we continue not to just like rest on our laurels, but keep working to a point where people are made aware that it's not okay to verbally abuse someone because of their sexuality or physically abuse someone's sexuality or anything like that. And I think then while the marriage issue has been answered, I think it's really important then for the LGBTQ plus community to be reflective about what it is as a community they want and they want to see.
I'd like to have a situation where there's no sense of, oh, did you hear she's gay? I thought that didn't happen. And I do think that the next really big thing is the whole issue of transgender. And I think that's a huge, huge thing. And I think that schools are going to have to really pull up their socks so they can deal with, because there's with the opening, you can't push things back in the box. And it's going to mean that people feel they have a right to actually say who they are, really. And that's a good thing, because hiding who you are. I think one of the saddest things I heard on the radio during the referendum was Pat Carey speaking, the politician, Fianna Fáil politician. I think he's in his 70s, he's late 60s or 70s. He's an older man. And he went through his entire life hiding the fact that he was gay. I just thought that was so sad. To go through your whole life and feel that you couldn't say who you are, you couldn't be yourself, and probably as a politician, he was probably afraid to act on it in case somebody'd find out. And so I think that's... So I would love to see an Ireland where it actually doesn't matter that your sexuality is your own business, and but that it doesn't matter, not because people are hiding it, but because they don't have to state it.
In the courtyard of Dublin Castle on the 23rd of May, the official vote of the marriage referendum was announced. The final result was 1,201,607 votes to yes and 734,300 votes to no. Equality at last.
We had gone to Hong Kong that weekend, and it was a Saturday, obviously, and we were trying to watch. In China, the internet is not very good, so we were delighted we were in Hong Kong because you could get the internet better, so we could follow it more. And it was on the world news now. I remember being in a hotel room and it was on the world news and saying Ireland, the first country to vote in the for equality, you know, and it was great. Well, yeah, the hairs in the back of your neck would stand up because it was very poignant.
I cried when all the scenes in Dublin Castle, I thought it was just amazing. I was so proud of Ireland, and I was so proud of Kevin. It was like as if he'd done it all on his own, you know.
See, I think when it affects yourself, it has a huge impact on you. I think that the impact is do you know what I mean, so changed. Like, we've done definitely 360 degrees of a turn here in terms of how that referendum impacted on us, and also the fact that Cahill, you know, that we become more aware and more enlightened of a whole range of things. Do you know what I mean?
Because even like the religious thing now, I would have totally different views on religion now, and on a God belief, because I mean I couldn't believe in this God of justice and God of judgment. I couldn't believe in that God anymore, and I'd say that would be directly as a result of Cahill being gay.
You know? And we've become, I suppose, as Kay said, more aware of, do you know what I mean, that this is a God of love, and that we expect him, that he will be a God of love to Cahill, no matter what status Cahill has in this life, and that we are, I think that when the Cahill came out and told us that he was gay, it had a huge impact on our lives. But I think that it was, as Kay mentioned before, that it was like as if a signal to God to say, look, you've got to change here. You've got to become more tolerant, less judgmental, do you know what I mean? More energized, that you have a son that is going to be different, and he's a healthy, happy young fella. And what you have to do is you have to love him more and sort of walk in his shoes, if you like.